Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to get this last bit of my bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit down the gullet.
At least move away from the mic if you're going to...
Do people still use that word?
Gullet? Oh, well, they should. It's a good word.
Oh, wait. I've got the wrong headphones on.
Is that why you're screaming at me?
I've got the... Oh, yeah. That's why I am screaming. STEM. The final frontier. Is that what you wanted to talk about?
I do think that that's an interesting topic these days. We hit STEM a lot because it's a placeholder at this point. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Let's go very high altitude. When did you start thinking in terms of STEM, and have you changed anything you do because you started thinking in terms of STEM? And when I say in terms of STEM, instead of thinking, you know, my teaching or my job, when suddenly it was STEM, STEM is important, STEM to STEAM. What we have to do, Peter, is we have to bring the arts into the STEM fields.
I've got to tell you, when I first heard STEM to STEAM, I laughed my ass off. I don't believe that now. I guess it was, you know, more than a decade ago that I started worrying about STEM. To be honest, I thought about STEM much more in terms of my educational research and my comedy act.
Explicitly, though, I'm saying, when did you start using STEM as the term? Because I'm sure that when you were in grad school...
No, did not exist.
Yeah, people didn't say the STEM fields.
Right. Probably started when I was postdocing in the early 90s, because I refer to an article, and I refer to this both in lectures I give on STEM and how to do STEM outreach and how to teach people about STEM, and in my comedy act, that there was an article written by the folks at the National Science Foundation that claimed they wanted to elevate the value of math. They actually called it SMET for a while.
I think it's funny, the idea of increasing the value of math, because it seems like math has the tools to do the value increase on its own. You know, they could just say M equals more.
Is that a...
Some kind of function.
Is that a tautology? Dun, dun, dun. I think every time Pete says tautology or does a Peter Griffin imitation, people should drink they listen to this
podcast.
Did
you get that tattoo that says tautology because of the podcast, or is that something else? Is that an old girlfriend?
My wife really digs it. I'm just gonna leave it at that.
When I was a young man, right?
Back before the Earth's crust cooled.
Me and the dinosaurs used to hang out. Now, when I was a young man, STEM was not a thing that people said. It was.
Me neither.
It was more about, but you were a younger man before I was a young man.
True.
For a good portion of your life, Pete, I was dead.
You were not alive. Is that the same?
Tell me what the definition is. Where were you during the Renaissance? That's a hat tip to Dana Carvey. My point is that when I was a young man and I was listening to what the kids called alternative music at the time, and I wanted to be not square, and I wanted to be special, and I wanted to be cool, although that was never going to happen, there were the arts.
Yeah.
There was creative work. That was a big, wide field, you know, of things you could do and ways you could express yourself. And then there was, you know, square jobs, job-type jobs that you would go to school for.
Many of them related to STEM.
Yeah, we didn't say STEM. We didn't. Science, technology, engineering, mathematics. What's missing? You know?
I think the other big thing, the other two things are business and the arts.
Isn't building construction missing? You know, where is construction there? Is that in engineering?
Yeah, you would put it in engineering.
I feel like...
But then there's the business side of construction.
Yeah.
Construction is engineering and business.
Also craft, you know.
Craft. Define craft.
Okay.
Craft is a tricky word. It adds a 40% markup to anything you buy. If it's craftsman, artisan, you know, and, you know, I love my wife, but she falls for that. Honey, look, it's artisan tile. Well, that's a 40% markup.
So occasionally I watch things on the internet, all right, because I don't have TV.
And is this something on the internet that pissed you off like last week?
Actually, no. No. Okay. This is a very simple thing. There's an ad for GE that plays before some Comedy Central videos now.
Yeah, and the kid says, I'm working for GE. I'm going to be programming for GE. Oh, really?
No, developer. I'm going to be a developer.
Uh-huh.
And then he starts talking about GE products. And what they've done is that they've created this little short story of a bunch of cool kids. Because, you know, they're all millennial, hipster, cool kids.
Who is might be programmers for the new website Zazzy
that puts fruit hats signs
on animals.
The glasses and the hair and the facial hair and the outfit and just the demeanor. And it's a very diverse group of friends. And the and one of the white guys has gotten a job at GE.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, oh, GE. He's like, yeah, I'm going to be working on... You know, things that make trains run better and da, da, da. And they're like, I don't understand. You're not going to develop anything? You're going to work on a train? You know, the misunderstanding is that, oh, you're going to be square. You're going to be a square guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was odd to me because I feel like we'd gotten away from that,
uh-huh.
that we'd escaped that. But it turns out we haven't.
We haven't?
Startup culture.
Mm-hmm.
Which you like to talk about a lot. Startup culture is the new arts. What 20 years ago was, I'm going to get into the arts, is startup culture.
How is startup culture the new art?
No, not the new art. I'm saying the
new cool thing.
The new cool thing.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
The new not square thing.
Oh, my God.
The new getaway.
I've been pushing this stuff like Goebbels. Yes, you must get into startup culture.
Please don't reference the Nazis. What are you doing?
I'm being a little self-critical. Maybe I'm pushing this too hard. I did attend...
Shouldn't you say like a Catholic nun?
What do Catholic nuns don't...
You were pushing something like a Catholic nun.
Yeah, Catholic nuns are scary and force you to do stuff, so yes. But I think their motivation was a little better than the Nazi party, having gone to Catholic school.
Yes, and this is my argument, Pete.
Yes. Sister Mary Neri was frightening. At St. Stephen's Parochial School in Des Plaines, Illinois. But she was not a bad math teacher.
Sister
she
Mary Neri.
Right. Oh, we were afraid of her, but she was a good math teacher.
Stick with me on this, right?
All right.
So, are you going to get your double E degree and go get a job, or are you going to be part of a startup? Is, to me, what 25 years ago was, yeah, I'm going to go to L.A., or I'm going to go to Chicago, I'm going to go to New York, and I'm going to work on this...
And I'm
going to
be, I would be an artist.
You know,
okay. No, that was more like 40 years ago.
No,
I think 25
I,
years ago, you went into investment banking.
No, I hear you. But, you know, to be a musician, to be an installation artist, to be a visual artist, even to be a web artist, you know, or a web designer, to work on some kind of performative communication, right? Or to be an academic even.
Right.
Yeah, because that was one thing you could do. You could be a professor. And go somewhere, like us, to a small school.
There was a time when being an academic was respected.
And you could, well, respected, but also quite freeing, you know?
Yeah.
We've talked about the social contract of academics, right?
Yes, and in fact, the movie that best embodies that is Hugh Grant in a movie called Rewrite. Did we talk about this before?
Yeah, you've mentioned that. I never saw it.
And basically, he was a big Hollywood writer. He wrote a big movie. It made a lot of money. He was really famous. And then he hasn't written a hit since then. So he's like, oh, I have to go to academia. And it was like, and then he realized.
He starts teaching writing.
He likes to teach.
Yeah.
It was a pretty funny movie.
Okay, well, that was a good placeholder, Pete. Now tell me your real point.
I don't know. What kind of point are you making here? I mean.
So if STEM.
Yeah.
Is actually now more of a, if that has created the area that you could go to be square, then what has it done? And why is startup culture the realm of, I'm going to be captain of my fate and master of my destiny and, or whatever the phrase is. And, you know, I'm going to do cool stuff. My life is dope. I do cool shit kind of thing.
I think the STEM people realized
the STEM people, they're coming for you.
The STEM people, hide your children. Listen, several decades ago, the STEM people realized that engineering and science wasn't cool, and they said, "Screw you to the arts people. We're going to make it cool. We're going to rebrand it." And they rebranded
STEM,
it,
yeah.
And by God, they did not make it cool.
Right? Because then STEM to STEAM is that idea. This is back to craft, crafting, craft practice. You know, I found recently that the thing I dig the most Sorry, I'm moving the
microphone.
You're
talking like a hipster from the 60s.
I'm not talking like a hipster from the 60s.
The thing I dig the most,
there were no hipsters in the 60s.
What were they? Hippies? Groovy, man.
Hippies or beats, right?
I don't know what a beat is.
You don't know what a beat is?
I know what a hippie is. I remember them from the 60s.
Beatnik.
Oh, beatnik. Okay. I didn't realize there was a cool abbreviation of that.
I have a fantasy that if I were born in the 40s, that I would have been a beatnik.
Look, bongo drums. Sorry.
Yeah, you know. Dark glasses, a beret. A beret worn in a time when that was okay.
Oh, man. The last guy I knew wore a beret.
Bongos, jazz.
Both of them. Both of them were from Caltech.
Jazz.
Linus Pauling.
Cigarettes.
And, who was the other guy? Who was the father of modern rocketry? Goddard. Bill Goddard. Chemist.
Father of modern what?
Well, Goddard was one of the big contributors, and I believe Bill Goddard is related to him. Bill Goddard, professor of chemistry at Caltech.
Okay.
Very interesting guy. Wore a beret. You know.
All right.
Beret is no longer the mark of a hipster.
No, and it should not be.
It's an old guy or a French guy. That's about it.
All right, I would have liked to have gotten high and listened to jazz records. That's what I would have liked.
Who wouldn't?
And to have been able to turn off the phone.
You can still turn off the phone.
Nah, I mean, yes, you can literally turn off the phone, but...
All right, here's the deal. Things go in cycles. This is my theory. And, you know, by coincidence of how things work you brand them...
Remember my inarticulate anxiety that the cycle was coming around to the more, you know, the violent attempted overthrow of certain ideologies?
Yeah, like those cycles happen.
This worries me.
I sat in a administrative meeting with some folks from the American Society of Engineering Education.
I didn't get to listen to Jazz Stoned before the violent overthrow. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So you should pencil that in for next week.
I got no time, and it's not legal in Georgia. I got to go to
Colorado. Let's get on a flight to Colorado.
Do I go to Colorado, hit a record store, be like, I need to...
And I want to listen to vinyl on the Verve label.
Ooh, now that was a...
Do I have it in
vinyl? That was a nice cut, man.
Crap, I have a CD of Kinda Blue by Miles Davis, which still may be the best-selling jazz album of all time.
It's okay if it's on CD. I'm not looking for the explicit medium kind of stuff. Like, a record's cool and all, but just, you know, to be stoned in a hotel room listening to jazz would be awesome.
But these things kind of go in cycles, and if you'd let me get in edgewise about my ASEE meeting.
Here's the thing I got to tell you. The whole get a word in edgewise thing, I think if we did a study, we'd find that your percentages were pretty matched with mine. And I have one point I've been trying to
get
to. I'm
eating now. That's how upset I am.
12 and a half minutes I've been trying to get to a point.
So one of my colleagues who doesn't teach engineering, he teaches engineering.
We should record the
technology.
Podcast in a smoke-filled room in Colorado while listening to jazz.
That'd just be,
Okay, a vapor-filled room. Then.
Okay. And he teaches engineering technology. And for those of you not familiar with it, it is part of the STEM cadre of stuff.
Well, if you flip it, METS, right, then you get the mathematics, engineering, technology, science. So engineering,
and
technology.
These
cadre.
Are degrees.
You've got to back off that mic when you swallow.
These are degrees. Well, if you let me get a word in edgewise, I didn't get a point in last week either. What
That's
do you want?
Not true.
Are you like chugging energy drinks before you come in here? Oh, just good old coffee.
And
Wilfred Brimley here for caffeine riddled coffee.
Damn good coffee and hot.
It helps me with my diabetes.
Here's why I don't let you get a word in edgewise. Where's your point? Now you do. Go ahead, do a Peter Griffin impression. Let's see. Let's see where you're going to take this.
Lois, I'm eating a biscuit right now. Wait.
All right, I'm going to give you.
This guy from engineering,
starting
engineering technology.
Now,
these are the folks that don't necessarily educate engineers, but they educate the support people in a plant or something like that. That's very valuable, you know, in Louisiana where we have a lot of chemical plants. Do you know what he told me? He said the programs are closing up. That we may have oversold STEM. And that always happens when you get a big push for something. You suddenly realize maybe I oversold it. It happened to artificial intelligence, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Maybe it's happening to STEM. There was a while when people pushed arts. STEAM is just the arts people saying, hey, we're important too. And I don't mean to make light of that. They are important. Because if you do STEM, the way that you figure out how to interface the technology with human beings is through the study of human beings. I believe that's called the humanities. And so a lot of this was precipitated by this talk by Brian Eno, the BBC Music John Peel lecturer, which I thought was very insightful. And it is important. I just don't know that we can articulate why the arts are important, other than STEM to STEAM, which sounds like
that's your minute, Pete. Sounds what like have you done with it?
Sounds like something you buy in an adult bookstore.
What'd you find in the Brian Eno? So this is the John Peel lecture. We found a transcript. You can also find it online.
He's talking about music and the arts, and he says, what's with all this STEM stuff?
But in particular, he said, why are we thinking that STEM is the way to make a healthy economy? And we're pretending that arts is a luxury. And that's the thing. You and I have come back to this over and over again.
Right.
Liberal arts is not a luxury. Arts is not a luxury. Humanities is not a luxury. Intellectual curiosity is not a luxury. But there's a certain amount of, and I hate to sound like Grant Morrison here.
Who's right? Grant Morrison?
Well, look it up. There's a certain amount of be part of the machine, you know? Learn this stuff. This is what makes us money. We don't want to have to train you. Get into the workforce. Work for a big company now. That's the thing that's kind of happening.
Ironically, the startup people are embracing more of this creative arts-based culture.
And back to what I'm saying.
They realize it's important.
There's a push to be your own person, to be creative, to be to be in some way nimble, right?
Actually, the term that the startup people use is agile. It's a means of programming code, agile programming. But they mean the same thing you're talking about, nimble, agile. They're synonyms. Look them up.
You know, I'm going to look up agile and nimble.
Right, they're probably
not
synonyms, but they're close enough, damn it.
Did you just call them cynicisms? That was awesome.
Oh, we've just invented a new word. It's every third word that comes out of Charlie's mouth. Cynicisms.
Able to move quickly and easily is agile. See, now that's, see, and then nimble. Oh, I'll be damned, you're right. Quick and light and movement or action.
Score one for
agile.
The Uber nerd.
Well done. So when I think nimble, I think, maybe dexterous is what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to...
Okay. Did you come across something dirty?
I don't really know how
Sometimes
to.
Sometimes you do.
I don't know how to describe the joke that just happened here with Google. So I'll just try to... Okay. I had definition agile in the Google search term.
And it gave you ambidextrous.
I changed agile to dexterous, right? But it's dexterous, right? And it started to give me a different... So I said, okay, I'll take your... I said, okay, Google, I'll take your spelling, the spelling of dexterous you're giving me. I trust you. But instead of that, it gave me this search term, amber, AMBER, space, dexterous, DEXTROUS, space, definition. Amber dexterous definition was a Google fill-in.
Right, but then it went to ambidextrous, which is a word.
But I'm saying ambidextrous is how some people have typed ambidextrous.
I think that's either when you can use either one of your, jaundiced, yellowed hands. Amber dexterous.
Deft. Ah. Neatly, skillful, and quick in one's movements. Deft. Here's the thing. So the startup culture folks who are in the library right now, the design block, IDC, the Innovative and Innovative Design Collaborative, they had a lot of ideas. You talk about the startup culture in libraries and how people are changing and doing things. Well, they came in and they wanted to do a studio space for support of multidisciplinary design education.
That sounds cool.
It is cool. The ultimate end result of this was as if a, I want to say monkey, but instead of monkey, what's a funnier animal with a little more...
Spiny echidna. Don't pick them up, though. They're prickly.
It was as if a lemur had leapt upon an
ring-tailed
elephant.
Ring-tailed or otherwise?
A ring-tailed lemur had leapt upon an elephant and started shouting out commands. Turn left, turn right, quick, over there. And the elephant was like, I need about a mile before I change.
Okay.
It was like that movie Speed 2. It was a cruise ship.
Yes, yes. Very long time scale for changing directions.
So yeah. The IDC, the nimble, deft, dexterous, agile.
Oh, and the
folks.
Library is the elephant?
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, we're going to fix that next week in a live podcast at the Southeastern Library Association, where we tackle library assessment.
I find that hard to believe that we will change anything.
We will change their very culture.
So at what point, at what level at Tech, at Georgia Tech, do you feel like a department or a group is nimble enough to make fast changes and to try things out quickly, to do rapid development, rapid prototyping?
The lemur would be a certain subset of the faculty.
Absolutely. But what,
and I
what
work
level?
With a lot of those folks.
Like one faculty member, 10 faculty members?
No. Wayne Lee is one. Was Wayne Lee?
That's who I'm talking about. Yeah,
Wayne Lee, radical dude. He is coming to talk to my startup, Living Learning Community, tonight, actually, which will be a week ago when you hear this thing. But guys like... Ray Vito.
Probably 2 weeks.
And,
2 weeks
for you. And Craig Forrest and a lot of other crazy guys that I work with. And they work with staff, people like Chris Reeves. And they're doing amazing things. But then when you try to get departments to do it, there's a lot of pushback. I mean, I'm trying to do it in chemical engineering. I'm getting a lot of pushback.
And so that goes,
they're the
that
elephant.
Goes back to the original thing. So STEM industries versus like STEAM-educated people.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the push and pull here, right? Get into the STEM fields, right? Be part, and even if you're working GTRI, which is a huge, you know, galumphing organization, right? Probably there's labs and teams that are like agile as hell, right?
Yeah, some of them, sure.
But the big picture, the things that it's working on, the larger scope of GTRI is a big ass cruise ship. Moving
yeah,
at a steady
and a lot
clip.
Of it is Department of Defense weapons.
Right,
weapons.
There's a lot of money coming in, and you can't just do a random thing. You know, I got away with a ton of stuff when I was younger in the library. I did get away with a ton of stuff when I was younger, but also I got away with a ton of stuff when I was a younger faculty member or a paraprofessional.
Right,
because totally under the radar, very minimal impact, mm-hmm. very minimal budgets. I could just do stuff.
Yeah,
and no one was saying. This doesn't seem to match the qualities that we expect in a Georgia Tech library.
But don't
project.
You write a mission statement? For example, when I get a domain, when I got. You
Are
know,
you master of your domain?
Actually, several. And I mean that by internet URLs. So if you request a domain, so I have Startup House for my Living Learning Community, and I have humor because we do a lot of humor stuff. When you request that domain, you are required to put down how this fits with the mission.
You're saying humor.godtech.edu.
Yeah, yeah. How this fits with the mission of Georgia Tech. And I will actually cite one of the objectives from the strategic plan. Who? I don't think anyone reads it, but by God, I can justify
it. But if you can get it across, where is the strategic plan of Georgia Tech?
Look up Georgia Tech strategic plan on any search engine and you're going to find it. But here's the problem. The problem is people want to monetize things and say, yes, you'll earn a fine living and you'll contribute to the commerce of the United States. And it's easy to see where an engineering degree does that. It's directly related. It's hard to see where the study of history or policy or arts does. History, policy, and arts make an indirect contribution, and it takes you a while to see it. And a lot of students don't see it. That's all I'm saying. Do you want to hear a good example of that? We had a lecturer in our seminar series from Sandia National Labs who invented this little lab on a chip device that you could take a bit of saliva at your dentist's office and put it in this thing and it would analyze it and give you probability of contracting periodontal disease. That's really important because now the way they do it is you start having gum loss and bone loss and it's already there. But if they could give you a marker that would indicate high probability – that's a valuable thing for health outcomes. So Sandia is a government lab, Department of Energy. They're like, hey, and they tried to license this to a company. They said, make some money. This will be good for society, right? You can license the patents from us. Nobody wanted to touch it. You want to know why?
I do.
Insurance companies do not cover periodontal treatment. So they didn't want to touch it. So you talk about understanding something about history, society, and policy.
Yeah.
That is very valuable. I mean, our students need to understand about public policy. It's very important for what they
do. There's a lot of foundational anecdotes, I think, that sort of define relationships to of of STEM to STEAM to policy to where the money is, maybe, you know. And
right.
And what I'm thinking of are simple things like Route 66, which at one time was this...
Get your kicks. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. It was this incredible pathway
adventure
from
to the
Chicago
west.
To California, right? Los Angeles. You could start in Chicago and end up in Los Angeles, and you just drive. Is that right? I think.
Yeah. But now you do it on. Yeah. And I have driven that in the big interstates.
But this is my point, right? So Route 66 was filled with roadside attractions and towns and towns that were
biggest
built on
ball of twine, stuff like that.
Yeah. And,
okay.
You know, built on the idea that, you know, people would drive past. People needed to stop somewhere, right? And then the interstate highway system came.
Yeah.
Right?
Curse you, Dwight David Eisenhower.
Except how awesome is the highway system.
Oh, it's really good.
It's fantastic. And you know, and you can sum it up simply, you can sum it up complicated. You can sum it up complicated, but you can sum it up with a very
and
long
you
view.
You work for the library?
I'm just a terrible person all around. From Chicago to Los Angeles without a stoplight. That's summing it up very simply, right? Whereas also a network of high speed roadways,
it's very
you know, that connect all kinds of places in America. Except now the problem is all those towns that grew up around Route 66
died.
They died.
Yeah,
right.
That's unfortunate.
And people fought for some kind of solution to that, but building the road, building the highway from Chicago to LA, you didn't have to take into account Route 66. You didn't have to take into account those towns. In fact, it was easier, cheaper to not take into
they
account.
They did global optimization
at the moment,
of
right?
Of the path.
Whereas, think about it, like that's a piece of why there is decay in America, right? I mean, you've got a lot of rural areas that were gently,
a bit of a reach there.
No, gently supported, right? But now the highways are the way that people are brought to small towns. You
right.
know?
But then there were new sets of towns that flourished because they were near the highways. Just like towns grew up around railroads and around the Autobahn in Germany. I actually would stop. We stopped at some towns off the Autobahn to check them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Mainly because there was like a 10-mile backup on the Autobahn. But still,
this,
we had a lovely time.
I'm not saying this is a moment of alternate history where everything could have been better. But like those towns, ghost towns, you know, that's decay. You got to admit, right? So the highway system was also an agent of
decay and renewal.
And renewal, sure. Except mostly.
What's your point?
It's a foundational anecdote about the short-term goals of projects and the long-term health of a system.
Okay. I can see that. Sometimes you're saying you're kind of throw away the baby with the bathwater, right? You're trying a new change, and it has unintended consequences.
Pete, must you use a cliche?
I like to mix metaphors.
Would you like to also hold down the fort and tickle it?
Yes, until it pees in its pants.
There are so one of the things that on the strategic plan. Goal four is to expand our global footprint and influence to ensure that we are graduating good global citizens, right? And at the core of that is the idea of having more ways to understand the influence and effect of your work besides just a bottom line, you know, a triple bottom line, you know, which is a you know about that, right? The triple bottom line.
No, what is the triple
people,
bottom
planet,
line?
Profits. Planet, people, profits. People,
oh, I
profits,
like that.
Planet.
That's good, and it's alliterative as well.
It's sustainability.
and that is now our new quality enhancement program. It's sustainability and service learning. What's it called? Live, love, pray? Sustain, live,
love,
learn.
Pray.
Sustain.
Live, serve, sustain.
Live, serve, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. And to me, those are just acronyms, and these are just words. But
this is just the jibber jabber.
They're only words unless you actually follow them.
Ants on a rock.
I think
hurtling
most
through the cosmos.
You know, Georgia Tech is better than most, but most of these guys that follow them because it looks good.
Let me ask you something,
but
Pete,
they would cut a program in a minute.
How do you look at yourself in the morning? How do you sleep at night?
I sleep just fine.
That's not true. I know that you wake up in the middle of the night.
No, I don't.
Scared.
Oh, sometimes to pee.
Lonely.
Because, you know, I'm old.
Frightened of and that, sustainability.
That prostate's only getting older.
Quality enhancement programs. What's your purpose? Why are you here?
So what's the point you're making? I'm just saying that the reason Brian Eno points out that STEM is trampling all over the arts is because it's harder to explain the indirect value of the arts. And one of the things of arts.
Stop. I don't think it's harder to explain the indirect. I think that it's harder to make money off the arts.
Oh, that's true. But then one of the other purposes of the arts is just to enjoy.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of things that are just to enjoy. I mean, you know, when you
most people don't enjoy engineering.
Except they do because of how nice a thing is or how much work it does.
They do, but nobody goes to a stadium to watch somebody do engineering.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I think back to the times
but the
I used to go to the Boston Pops.
Is a feat of engineering.
And that's good. That's good. But I remember going to the Boston Pops, and if you got a table down on the floor,
how
and you let
you
the music
still
wash
have an
over
inferiority
you.
Complex about this. You people have won. The Morlocks have won.
No, don't call the engineers the Morlocks. We are not the troglodytes from down below.
Morlocks were not troglodytes.
What were they?
They were highly refined cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
sounds like a troglodyte to me.
You make a good point. They were the workers, and they ate.
Yeah, we won. I'm not trying to say we're getting stomped on by the arts. I'm trying to say it's the other way around, and it's a bad thing. And there are people that will stand up and say—
No one gathers in the stadium to watch engineering.
Right, because the arts are just—they are what make us human.
Are you saying that they're super cool?
To humans, yes, because we can't live without them. I can't live without them.
A little bit of jazz.
Right, and I think the STEM to STEAM was just a rebranding of the arts to say, hey, we contribute too, but indirectly. That's all it was. And it's true. It's absolutely true.
Okay.
But can't we just enjoy the arts? Here's the thing.
No.
Not everyone can be an artist.
You can't just enjoy the arts.
Someone has to be an actuary.
It's obvious. I think it's obvious to everyone.
I think I can just enjoy it.
That if you don't do some art, then, you know, you... then something's wrong with you. You know, you have to have something that you do. As Brian Eno said, all the things you don't have to do are the arts. Like eating, you could
that's
just
not a bad
you could just eat the whatever the chunk of what is it called? It's not a meal ready to eat or something.
Yeah, that's
you know,
what the military calls it.
Yeah, but just like just, a brick of
let's
sustenance.
Let's go to the movie The Martian, the book actually.
Okay, yeah.
Gelatinous protein cubes.
You could just eat this paste,
everything a body needs.
This nutrient paste, right? But we don't. We cook food, and sometimes you can have a meal that is like some kind of transcendent work of art.
And it is mixed with good wine and good conversation.
Oh, that's definitely what I'm talking about. Like that.
Absolutely. I am a huge fan of the culinary arts.
That's art.
Yeah.
Okay? And as is... I'm trying to come up with something in your realm, Pete, that might be art. All I can think of is pumps. I don't know, maybe you slap a nice coat of paint on it.
No, but the lecture I'm giving to the Baltimore Underground Science Space... is, you know, an extension of what we're doing in this NSF grant to say that humor, when used in the right way, can engage people
STEM. Humor's an
that's
easy,
an art.
That's an easy one to go with. I'm trying to say, like, what in engineering, what in the... That time you blew up the polymer lab?
Yeah, that was not art. That was a travesty.
That was art, man.
Nobody laughed. Okay, I laughed a little because nobody was injured. But the way you see art... is it contributes. So there are a lot of hybrid systems. And the people that are trying to figure out human cognition cannot do it without understanding the arts, because that is what makes us uniquely human.
Guess see what lights up when you listen to a symphony.
And that is what is part of our creative process. So here's what we're realizing. We're working on these algorithms that mimic some aspects of human thinking, and we realize we're so far from it. You know what the new thing in advances in cognitive systems is? Hybrid systems, where you have the computer process some part of it, and then the people process the more abstract, difficult to understand part, and together we do extremely well. That's a new thing now, and that comes from the mixture of the arts and the sciences and math.
You gonna let me get a word in edgewise?
Indeed.
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.